we've got intel that's stating that Israeli Defense Force guys, I'm not mentioning names here, are already stating that Syria is definitely looking at war. War is inevitable. It's going to happen. We know that Russia is selling Syria the S-300 anti-missile system, which they used to block the Israeli Air Force from attacking Iran when Iran was loading up the reactors with the fuel rods. Bill, tell us what's going on. What do you think?
Well, where do you want to start? I mean, the whole Middle East is a quagmire right now. I guess Syria is the best place to start. Those S-300 missiles were supposedly going to go to Iran, but then when the sanctions were levied a while back, Russia held back from sending S-300 missiles defense to Iran and upset Iran. Iran actually wanted to sue on behalf of getting those, but now they're going to make their way over to Syria, and Benjamin Netanyahu went over to Russia to try to warn Putin that if those S-300 missiles made their way to Syria, they would probably have to go after them, Israel would, because they've got to stop anything that can shift the balance of their control over there, and they've got to stop, of course, any weapons getting from Syria into Hezbollah. So thus they've struck Syria on a couple occasions over the last few weeks. And it's interesting because comments coming out of the IDF, like, for instance, IDF Chief of Staff General Benny Gantz, mm-hmm. he toured the Golan on May 21st right. near the border with Syria and told lawmakers, it says here, I'm reading something, that tensions in the north could quickly devolve into war. And he echoed that sentiment on the heels of a senior official in Israel with the Home Front Defense named Minister Gilead Erdan, warning that right. it was only a matter of time before major Israeli cities started getting pounded by rockets. So it's just a matter of time before major cities in Israel get pounded by rockets. And, of course, the threat has already been levied by Assad that any other strikes on Syria by Israel would have rockets rained into Tel Aviv. So it's a very, very troublesome situation. Matter of fact, Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to the Chancellor of Germany about a week ago. And I'm going to mess up his quote. I don't have it right in front of me. But he said something along the lines of, the Middle East has never been more unstable, and Israel's never been surrounded by such instability in several decades. Now, I would go on to say they've never, ever been surrounded by such instability because the countries around them have the weapons to actually wipe them off the map. That's something that never really could have been said before throughout time immemorial. But anyway, that's just a little update on it. I mean, when you talk about what's going on with Syria and this threat to come to Tel Aviv, you know, we probably then need to dovetail in at some point into Bible prophecies. There's three main Bible prophecies written about Syria, and they're in Isaiah 17, Jeremiah 49, and Amos 1. But the threat to hit Tel Aviv was also made at the end of 2011 by Bashar Assad when he wanted to make sure that NATO, who had intervened in the Libya revolution, and he said at the time, he said, don't intervene in my revolution in Syria, because I will take, in 6 hours, we will rain missiles into Tel Aviv. 3 hours, Hezbollah will rain some, and in the other 3 hours, Iran will shut the, protect the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
Israel's response to that back then was, well, then we will take your family and you will be out of, your regime will be out of power. That's the same thing they just threatened again recently. If you hit Tel Aviv, we'll take your regime out of power. So this is not a new scenario. This was quoted at the end of 2011. So this seems to be the juggler. If they're worried, they're going to hit Tel Aviv, and then apparently Israel thinks the main thing to threaten Assad with is to take him out of power.
It's unprecedented. I mean, when we really look at the Middle East and what's going on here, and I mean, here I am. I'm looking at Fox News on the web, and IRS official at center of scandal. Okay, the whole Benghazi thing, IRS and everything else, we need to talk about that. Right underneath, you got, you know, Jody Arias, mistrial declared, jury deadlocks and penalty phase, terror conspiracy. There's nothing here. There's not a thing on what's going on in the Middle East, and this is Fox News. And this is, in my opinion, unconscionable, that a major outlet like this would choose to cover stories and not say anything about the Middle East. And of course, that place, what Americans don't understand is that the vitriol is reaching, has reached fever pitch. I mean, just the stuff that's going on with the Muslim Brotherhood, the stuff that happens in Tehran every Friday night, it's crazy. It's really reaching a fever pitch. Spring is the time that kings go to war. We're moving out of spring into summer. The Muslim Brotherhood, we just gave them $450 million. I mean, it's just insane. And they're no friend of Israel. I want to focus on Jordan a little bit here, Bill, before we move over to Egypt, because Jordan is like right sort of in the crosshairs here. If there's a war with Syria, I mean, you better believe Jordan's going to be involved on some level, either backing Syria or trying to stand down, or already it's swollen with refugees from Syria. What are your thoughts concerning Jordan, the king of Jordan, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is in there now, trying to pose the king? And also the fact that Jordan and Egypt just dismiss their Israeli ambassadors. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Jordan is supposedly one of the last vestiges of a moderate Muslim country in the Middle East and last friend of Israel, because you're going to see Egypt start to turn on Israel with Mohammed Morsi. Yeah. Jordan is in end times Bible prophecies, and they are in Psalm 83 under the banner of Ammon, Moab, and Edom. And right now, Jordan, they have a fragile peace treaty with Israel that was crafted, confirmed by Bill Clinton, I think it was in 1994. But it's very volatile. And the Muslim Brotherhood is pushing in on Jordan. They've got a problem with all the Syrian refugees that have come out of Damascus and other areas into northern Jordan. And King Abdullah II is really concerned that he could be the next Arab leader to be taken out.
Sure.
And that he could be drawn into a war, like you said. It's interesting, in Psalm 83, it says that Assyria helps the children of Lot, meaning Moab and Ammon in Jordan. In other words, Jordan, at the time Psalm 83 happens, that climactic concluding Arab-Israeli war, is pictured as being somewhat weak, needing assistance, needing help. And that is the case with Jordan today. Their army is just ranked, I think, around number 44 or 45 among world armies. It's the weakest army in Psalm 83, behind Egypt, ranked number 16, Saudi Arabia ranked number 26. Lebanon would be ranked a little lower. They're also in Psalm 83. But when you add Hezbollah's firepower in there, that actually makes them more powerful than Jordan's army. The Jordanian army right now is really not an offensive army. It is mainly just established at this point to protect the Hashemite kingdom. Now, Jordan tends to get sucked into the Middle East wars. Gamal Nasser got King Abdullah's father into the 67 war, kind of drew him into that, and the 73 war as well. I think the 73 war is where he was drawn into it. And so this is probably going to be the case. I don't think Jordan would want to go to war. I don't think King Abdullah II wants to be deposed. But, you know, with what's happened in the Arab Spring and the kings that have been taken out, I mean, it says in Daniel 2:21 that the Lord changes times and seasons. He removes and raises up kings and gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those with understanding. And what's clear to me is over the last couple years, several kings have been removed. Several kings have remained in place. New kings are in place now with Morsi. And the kings that have been removed were not the best apples in the tree, but they were not going to probably go to war with Israel. But the ones that are remaining are very much ready to go to war with Israel. Hassan Nasrallah, Ahmadinejad, Bashar Assad, Mohammed Morsi now in the mix. So Jordan really is sort of the fish out of water in this situation. And the Muslim Brotherhood is making its move throughout the Middle East. They're spreading their tentacles. They're trying to get back into Syria now. They, Hafan Assad, Bashar Assad's dad, had repressed them for several decades. The Muslim Brotherhood has been repressed, but now they're opening an office inside the opposition-controlled territories. They're also moving in on the Gulf states, the UAE and stuff like that. So it's just crazy over there right now. And my concern is, Psalm 83 is about to happen, but you have peripheral prophecies like the destruction of Damascus and stuff going on with Egypt and things like that. Now, Damascus, technically, when you look at Bible prophecy, it was in an area called ancient Aram, A-R-A-M. And when Asaph wrote Psalm 83 3,000 years ago, Aram was not part of Assyria. And he does mention Assyria in Psalm 83, but he does not mention Aram. So what you could see, and I think it's pretty clear that Syria in general, modern-day Syria, is in Psalm 83. Mm-hmm. But you could see that Damascus has its, the destruction of Damascus is what I'm alluding to in Isaiah 17:1, mm-hmm. which says Damascus will cease to be a city, it will be a ruinous heap. You could see that Damascus has its own independent prophecy and very well could precurse Psalm 83. I mean, Damascus right now is in extreme jeopardy because if there's going to be missiles lobbed from Syria into Tel Aviv, it's a prison rules fight for Israel at that point. And I would say they would probably come against Damascus and possibly nuke it and destroy it, which really, I mean, I know you've had your blogs and talked on your radio show about the destruction of Damascus on numerous occasions, sure. but there's peripheral prophecies we can talk about too in Jeremiah and Amos.
Well, it seems like, you know, Damascus is actually being torn apart brick by brick as we speak. You know, I've seen pictures. I mean, granted, some of the city is still intact, obviously. It's not a ruinous heap yet, but it's well on the way to becoming a ruinous heap. And who would have imagined that the Assyrian people themselves would be destroying their own capital? I mean, that's, you know, that's sort of unprecedented. Let's move over to Egypt with Morsi, the Brotherhood, the fiery Imam Higazi, who's swearing that Jerusalem will become the capital of a new created Arab, you know, United States of the Arab United States or the Arab States. I'm not sure how you say it. United Arab States. That's it. So it's that's never going to happen. I mean, Netanyahu and the Israelis are never going to go for that. And I've got clips. I know you've got clips when we present this stuff to people, Bill, on the road at conferences where, you know, Higazi's chanting the crowd, it's Jerusalem, we go, martyrs in the millions. So there's no there's really not a lot of love loss. And I just want to tie this in. It's a, sort of a double question. Talk about Morsi and Egypt and what's going on there and Higazi. But also let's address Yasser Arafat has been exhumed. The body is exhumed, and they've taken lots of samples, and they believe he may have been poisoned. And, of course, if that happens, then this could be a tipping point. So put that in the blender, Bill, and please answer three questions there.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. As far as the tipping point, I think the tipping point was the Arab Spring, and that at this point in time, everything is going to rapidly deteriorate and ultimately lead into a war. And I think the Obama administration has sensed that, and that's why they've got John Kerry going over redefining shuttle diplomacy. He's over there again as we speak.
Yes, yes.
He's been going back and forth on every two-week interval over the last couple months. And he's starting to ratchet up the pressure on Israel, and he's going to have to because – you know, the Arabs aren't going to make any concessions. They never do. It's always Israel that has to do appeasing and make concessions. And so the Obama administration went over, you know, saying, we got your back when it comes to Iran. You know, we're still your best friends. All we need you to do is adopt the Saudi Peace Initiative of 2002, which means you got to give up all your land, give up East Jerusalem, let the refugees return into Israel. And but everything will be just fine. We got your back on Iran. Now, I'm going to suggest to you, L.A., that if they craft any kind of peace, it'll be temporary at best because the Bible screams about prophecies, peripheral prophecies of war coming into the Middle East. And I believe Psalm 83 is the one that probably starts that whole thing off, followed up by Ezekiel 38 and 39, the Gog of Magog invasion. But, you know, so basically, as far as the tipping point goes, I think we're past the point of no return. Israel celebrated its 65th birthday this past May 14th. And I think at this point in time, the wisdom to the wise, the knowledge to those that have understanding is that the Lord gave the international community 65 years to try to resolve the conflict. It made matters worse. Israel's enemies do have the arsenal to swipe Israel off the map. At this point, it's going to come to war because diplomacy has failed. The Obama administration has brought nothing new to the table except trade God's promised land to try to put a two-state solution together to achieve an elusive peace. And it's not biblically endorsed, and I just don't suggest it's going to happen. Now, when it comes to Egypt, the United States of the Arabs, you know, you and I, we spoke together in New York here not too long ago.
Right.
And I had some of those slides up. And Safat Higazi was one of his campaign managers. He's a Muslim cleric with the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's exactly right. Millions of more. There was tens of thousands in the streets of Cairo at this rally. Morsi was sitting there soaking it all in. And they want to form a United Arab States. They want the capital to be Jerusalem. They want to liberate the Gaza, which is where the Hamas are. The Hamas were founded by the Muslim Brotherhood in 1987. The Hamas are the Muslim Brotherhood. The Hamas do want Jerusalem. So do the Palestinian Authority. It is going to be a march toward Jerusalem. And Safwan Ghazi has come out even since that May video. Shot May and said, yes, the day will come and we'll be masters of the world. He said that in August of 2012. And he went on to say, if not through peace, there's nothing preventing war. We welcome war. Now, this United Arab States they're talking about is not the same as the Arab League, which was founded in 1945.
Yeah. And whole different deal.
Yeah. And that the Arab League is basically ineffective at this point. It can't even stop the Syrian revolution or do anything. It has 22 members. And when they established it, on the heels of World War II, it was because the Arab states were getting their statehood, like Egypt in 1922 after the Ottoman Empire was collapsed, Saudi Arabia and Iraq 1932, Lebanon 1943, Syria and Jordan 1946. And then, so they had to put together a league so that they could have international recognition and ability to treaty and do commerce internationally, but also amongst themselves. So it had an immediate purpose. But as far as anything broader than that, it's always failed miserably. So what Mohamed Morsi wants to do is put together a Arab caliphate. He wants to call it the United States of the Arabs. They want Jerusalem to be its capital, not Cairo. And the only reason he's not moving on that just yet is his country is essentially bankrupt. And he's trying to get about $38+ billion from sources like Qatar with $20 billion, from Turkey $2 billion, Saudi Arabia $3.75 billion, a loan from the International Monetary Fund of $4.8 billion, which will free up some money out of Europe for about $6 billion. I mean, when you add it all up, he's trying to get about $38 billion. At the end of 2012, Standard & Poor's downgraded their credit reserve rating in Egypt from a B to a B minus, putting them on even par with Greece. But, Mohamed Morsi has said in 2010 that the Jews are bloodsuckers and descendants of apes and pigs, and he urged military resistance against Israel, called to sever ties with the Jewish state. So I don't believe any of that's changed. He's just playing a little cat and mouse right now until he gets his money. And then he will then, violate that peace treaty with Israel, move towards Jerusalem, and that sort of thing. Now, did that answer a couple of those questions?
Well, yeah, it certainly does, and you did it with great erudition on your part, as always, Mr. Salas. I mean, this is what you do. This is your time. I think you're the go-to man, specifically with what's going on in the Middle East, and how it relates to Psalm 83. I want to talk about. I have a question here from Carrie, who wrote, and she asked, it's a couple of questions here, and they're really good questions, which is why I went to her. She writes, can you speak to the report that Tehran is shopping for North Korean nukes? Can you speak to the report, the rumor that's going around that Tehran is shopping for North Korean nukes? I mean, we know that they've got the reactors, they've got fissile material. We've heard they're a year away, 2 years away from a bomb. They've got a delivery system which can go up about 200 miles. It could certainly reach Tel Aviv. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have heard just a little bit about that. I do believe they are trying to get nukes from North Korea. But again, I think they're very close to having their own as well. What I heard on this when I read an article on it was that if they get the nukes from North Korea, it will, whatever North Korea's firepower is, Iran will then be about 100 times more dangerous because of the other things they got going with their launching capabilities and those types of things and their location near to Israel. I don't know a whole lot about that. I don't know how active they are about that, but I know that North Korea has been involved in transporting chemical components and things on through Iran, through Syria, into Hezbollah, making mustard gas and things like that. So North Korea is a bedfellow with Iran. They have been for a long time. And they're a rogue state just like Iran is. So, I mean, they have to be watched. And you got that crazy 28-year-old running North Korea right now. He's trying to do is, flex his muscles because he needs revenues, and his revenues come from military exports. And so, he's threatened like he was going to nuke America and all that, but it really appears more that what he was trying to do is show off his arsenal so that he could get some buyers. And then one of those buyers, of course, it would be Tehran.
Second part question, and thanks for that answer. is it true that al-Qaeda's entire Iraqi fighting strength has migrated to Syria? We've heard reports, Bill, of al-Qaeda setting up bases on the Golan. So what's the latest? What are you hearing?
Well, a lot of al-Qaeda from all over the Middle East has moved into the rebel forces, the opposition in Syria, and they're heavily entrenched over there. And that's what makes the whole Syrian revolution such a dangerous situation. Bashar Assad is doing a lot better than people think, and Israel acknowledges this. He may not be taken out like everybody was thinking he would, and they underestimated his ability to stay in power. But, you know, you have such a mishmash of people over there. You got the Muslim Brotherhood, the al-Qaeda. You got some true Syrian rebels that want, you know, democracy over there, and they're all in this mix together. And as far as Iraq, I don't frankly know if the whole al-Qaeda contingency has left Iraq, but what I do know is that just about when the Arab Spring started in 2011 and we were announcing our pulling out of Iraq and all that stuff going on, Muqtada Sadr, the Muslim cleric, came out of self-imposed exile out of Iran, where he had been meeting with Ahmadinejad and Hassan Nasrallah of Hezbollah over a period of a couple of years. And he went back into Iraq. He's very good friends with Prime Minister Nouri Maliki, who's pro-Iranian. And now what we feared is happening in Iraq, that they are becoming they're possibly going to become an Iranian proxy as well. So nothing good is going on around Israel right now. It's just getting worse every day, every month.
Yeah, it's I follow this every single day, and I've never seen it this tenuous before. It's multiple sources are telling me, just from stuff that's coming over the J-Post, but also people in Israel, that it's the Israeli people are concerned. They know what's coming. In fact, I think there's a story here. Let me just get to it real quick. Right there.
Well, while you're looking at it, you know, like I quoted earlier, Benny Gantz, the IDF chief of staff, said that everything could devolve quickly into war. That home defense minister said it's just a matter of time. It's not if, but when.
And I agree.
That cities are going to get pounded with rockets. I mean, they're worried that their cities are going to get pounded with rockets. And the in America right now, with the liberal press, mainstream media is wrapped up with the IRS scandal. The Benghazi cover-up, the AP leaks out, dealing with Yemen. And so the Middle East news, which should be on the front page, has been pushed back to the back page. And that's what just startles me, L.A., because
– Well, it startles me. It's almost deliberate. It's like keep everybody dumbed down. This is from the Times of Israel. The question is, no longer will rockets be fired at large populated areas in Israel. The question is when it will happen. So, this is a home front defense minister, Gilead Erden. And it's like, these guys just don't throw stuff like that around. And, of course – here's another quote. Eshel stated that Syria is changing before our eyes. If the regime could collapse tomorrow, we may very quickly find its large arsenal scattered and directed towards us. That's from May 23rd J-Post. So this thing's coming down like a freight train. Israel's already beginning chemical warfare drills. I mean, they are right in the thick of it, folks, right in the thick of it. And there's no help from anybody there at all. And, frankly, I believe we've got a president who's a closet Muslim and, keeping Netanyahu waiting. And when Netanyahu's on a plane flying from Israel to meet with Obama, Obama says, well, before we do anything, we need to go back to the pre-67 lines. Whoa. And we all know that that's completely indefensible and everyone knows it. And one pincer move and they could cut Israel right in half and it's over in a matter of hours. But, Bill, it's amazing that we live in a time – let's move into the sort of the supernatural dynamic to all this. And we are dealing with two supernatural events, different sets of supernatural events. In the Islamic world, they believe that Muhammad got the Quran and Muhammad descended into heaven and all this. And they have their view of the Jews, that people that missed it, and that's why Muhammad came. But then you've got the Israelis, the Jews – who believe in another set of supernatural events that actually go back 4,000 years plus, not only 1,300 years, but 4,000 years. And the prophecies in that book, of course, we're talking about the Tanakh, what we call the Old Testament or the Bible, concerned a people who have been regathered from the four corners of the earth and reestablished. And it says in the word, in Scripture, never again to be removed from that land once it's been regathered. Speak to that for us, Bill, please.
Right. Well, the existence of Israel today is in fulfillment of numerous Bible prophecies. Mm-hmm. God has big plans for little Israel. And the way, one of the main things he's going to do is in the when he defeats the Gog of Magog invasion, which is going to be the most armed and dangerous Mideast invasion of all time. It'll even be bigger than Psalm 83, which I believe will precede the Ezekiel 30 yes. and 39 battle. And what's going to happen is, unlike the Psalm 83 battle, where the IDF appears to be relevant, and appears to be the tool used by the Lord to stop the Arab armies, there'll be no involvement of America or the IDF or anybody, because the Lord himself, we're told in Ezekiel 38 verses 16 through Ezekiel 39 6, will levy the destruction with an earthquake. It says every man's sword will be against his brothers, and there'll be fire, hail, and brimstone. And it'll be clear it's an Old Testament divine destruction. And the purpose being, it says it in Ezekiel 39 verse 7, that I will make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel, and I will not let them profane my holy name anymore. Then the nation shall know that I am the Lord, the Holy One in Israel. The point being, it requires Israel being, you know, Jews in the land, and this invasion comes to commit genocide. They're coming to get plunder and booty. Russia, Iran, Turkey, Libya, Ethiopia, and there's 9 populations in total. They're coming to destroy Israel, take the land, take the plunder and the booty. God stops that, and the exclamation mark, the statement there is that, look, people of the world, and this is in the latter days, it says, my holy name has just been upheld in the midst of my people Israel. Every genocidal attempt that ever came against the Jews has failed, and every attempt to try to take the land has failed. Because why? Because I made an unconditional covenant with Abraham 4,000 years ago. You can see it in Genesis 15. You can see it in Genesis 12, that required that he would have a people forever, and that he would have, and they would have a land forever, a chosen people and a promised land. So any attempt to kill the Jews and to take the land will fail, because God promised Abraham that he would have a chosen people and a promised land. The point being that he's a promise keeper. And it happens, in my estimation, this happens even as a pre-trib event. And just shortly before the Antichrist comes on the scene, tries to dupe humanity with the lie, tries to get them involved with their DNA upgrades or whatever that's going to be, right, L.A.? I know that's what you teach on that. Yep. And basically God is saying, look, choose me, the God of the Bible, or because this other guy's going to come on the long here, and he's going to have you all duped. And he showcases Israel as the big event of this situation. I can go through all the prophecies. I mean, there's about a dozen prophecies that clearly talk about the Lord would bring the Jews out of the nations of the world into the land of Israel. They'd come in unbelief. They'd come out of a Holocaust condition. It would be a second time, not a third, fourth, or fifth. Isaiah 11:11, a second time, this time. And, you know, so here they are. We were told it's even going to be a bigger miracle than the parting of the Red Seas, Jeremiah 23:7-8. Therefore, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that they will no longer say, as the Lord lives, who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt, but as the Lord lives, who brought up and led the descendants of the house of Israel from the north country and from all the countries where I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. So what Israel today is even a bigger deal, a bigger miracle than the parting of the Red Sea. Even Jeremiah 23 says it was supposed to be, and unfortunately the church, with replacement theology, the preponderance of the church, doesn't get it, L.A., and that's why a lot of your churches are uncognizant of what's really going on right now, and they're going to wake up any given morning real soon, and missiles are going to be flying, mm-hmm. and there's probably going to be weapons of mass destruction introduced on a large scale in the Middle East theater, and that is going to adversely affect stock markets. I mean, just look at what happened to the Nikkei today. It was down 7.3%, down 1,143 points.
Unbelievable.
You know, right. Just because Bernanke spoke. Now, you start shutting down the Strait of Hormuz, have terrorism inside of certain countries, perhaps, major Middle East war, a nuclear weapon may be going off, destroying Damascus or something, or chemical weapons. You know, that's going to change a lot of things. People thinking everything's going along like sweet apple pie right now, they're going to be in for a real shock, and they're not getting any warning from the pulpit, most of these pulpits.
We've got a question here from Richard Terry, my friend in Colorado. What are Bill's thoughts on Israel's? What are Bill's thoughts on an Israeli preemptive strike on Hezbollah's missile cache, as well as Syria and their S-300 before it's operational? Maybe even Iran at the same time. Bill?
Well, we know that they do preemptive strikes.
Yep.
They did it in Iraq's nuclear power plant. They did it in 2007 in Syria's. They did it just over the last month, a couple times into Syria. And they will probably do it to Iran. And that actually might even be a prophecy in Jeremiah 49 dealing with Elam. But we'll come to that in a second. As far as Hezbollah goes, I don't think Israel would have any problem striking Hezbollah, because Hezbollah is an avowed enemy. And that's why they're striking Syria, as they don't want Hezbollah to get Syria's Scud-Ds
right.
and their chemicals.
Right.
The Scud-Ds, which Syria has, and they're the most advanced Scuds in the world, and they can go 400 miles and hit within a 20-yard radius with pinpoint accuracy. So anywhere in northern Syria could hit anywhere in southern Israel. And Hezbollah supposedly has those. And now the chemicals are the question. Does Hezbollah have chemicals? I believe they have some of their own, but I don't know if they have some of the vast stuff that Bashar Assad had that he got from Iraq and that he also developed himself. So I think – you know, you're going to see this stuff happen. Poor Israel, L.A. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu has gone on the record. He says, I will go anywhere I got to go. I will talk to anybody I got to talk to make it clear that I will defend my people's existence. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is right now. Israel has got to defend its existence. It is surrounded by people. What astounds me is that after 1878 years with the Jews spread out in the nations of the world from 70 A.D. to 1948 A.D., why in the heck couldn't the Jews come back after the Holocaust and just be accepted in the land? Why do they hate them so much? Well, it's because they've hated them forever. It's because in the 7th century, Muhammad comes along and takes all that hatred and puts it under a religious canopy of Islam. And so when the Jews come back in the land, instead of getting banners and balloons, they get bullets and bombs. And now they got missiles, they got Scud-Ds, they got chemicals, hundreds of thousands of missiles pointed at them. Hamas would love to shoot some more rockets into Tel Aviv. Syria is threatening to do that. You know, this is not going to just be another skirmish, L.A. This next one's going to be the mother of all Mideast wars, and it's coming.
Yeah, it really is. And what you described, the collapse possibly of the stock market, maybe the collapse of a dollar, oil going through the roof, you know, $200-$400 a barrel. If the Iranians join the fray and they shut the Strait of Hormuz down, which they certainly can do, we just don't know what we're looking at. And this is why it's so imperative for people to prepare. I mean, you know, to really to prepare and take a hard look at what's going on and realizing that Bible prophecy is happening right in front of our faces. I mean, and it, like I said earlier in the program, I'm not going to belabor the point, but, you know, I just went on the Fox News website. Not a word, not a peep, nothing, not even a minor headline about what's going on in the Middle East. And meanwhile, you know, the winds of war are blowing, the drums of war are beating, and our media is definitely on snooze big time. So I just, and let's face it, look, this IRS thing and the Benghazi thing needs to be, in my opinion, Bill, like I'm sure you would agree, this is, you know, Nixon at its best or at its worst. And it's extremely Nixonian what we're looking at. And there needs to be a special prosecutor and people need to hunt this stuff down. This is like, you know, weasel a go-go. And it's in our government. I mean, it's just the tactics are stuff like, is this America anymore? And unfortunately, we have to deal with that. A war in the Middle East, it's going to turn everything upside down. And here's something to think about, folks. We will watch it in real time via satellite. We will. And it's hard to say what's going to kick it off. Bill, the question earlier regarding Arafat. They've exhumed Arafat's body. They believe that he may have been poisoned, which leads only to one, you know, the top of a list is the Israelis. That would be, you know, my first pick. And, of course, if they find that out, if they find that he was poisoned, then that opens up a whole can of worms. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it will open a can of worms. But, you know, something is going to spark a epic biblical war.
Yes.
Psalm 83 and the peripheral ones. we don't exactly know what it is. We do know this, according to, you know, first of all, I would tell your listeners, and I'm harping on what you just said. I don't know how you really could even make any sense out of what's going on right now in the world, especially in the Middle East, without your Bible. Because
I agree.
When you read your Bible now, you read Isaiah 17 or these other prophecies regarding Syria, or Isaiah 19 regarding Egypt, or Ezekiel 29 regarding Egypt, or Psalm 83. You know, it's almost like reading and watching the news right now. You can always hand that to a newscaster and say, read this. Psalm 83, verse 4, they come together, they want to cut the nation off, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. Okay, Joe, what do you think about that? Isn't that sort of what's going on there? The Hamas wants to wipe Israel off the map. Oh, I'm sorry, that was written 3,000 years ago. Give me the script for today. I'm sorry, I just read something 3,000 years ago. Well, that's what we got going here right now. And what's gonna start this war, it could be a number of things. Israel could strike Iran's have a nuclear disaster in the Bushehr nuclear plant. That could be right out of the playbook of Jeremiah 49, verses 34 through 35, with the prophecies of Elam, which nobody's talking about. What we do know is that in Zechariah 12:2, that at some point it says they're going to come to lay siege. The surrounding peoples are going to come to lay siege on Judah and Jerusalem. So in other words, what this would mean, you know how the Palestinians, they want to make Jerusalem the eternal capital of a Palestinian state.
Sure.
Mahmoud Abbas said that 3 days after he got his non-member observer state status, and end of 2012, he comes out on December 3rd and says, we want, you know, Jerusalem to be the eternal capital. And so what they're going to do is they're going to abandon diplomacy at some point in time. And here's what Zechariah says, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness, a cup of trembling, in some translations, to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. So they're going to lay siege. They're not going to, you know, it doesn't say when they give up land for peace. It says when they do lay siege, when they try to do a military campaign to take the land, the Judah and Jerusalem. But it says here to the Arabs, in that day I will make the governors of Judah, the captains of Judah, this is Zechariah 12, verse 6, that's the IDF, like a fire pan on the woodpile, and like a fiery torch in the sheaves. They shall devour all the surrounding peoples on the right hand and on the left, but Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place. So a fire pan in the woodpile, the picture of a fiery torch going through sheaves or some sort of wheat field or whatever, and just burning everything up and devouring the surrounding peoples, and the Hebrew word is sabayiv, and it means those people that encircle them, and the right hand and on the left. So you're dealing with, to me, the Psalm 83 countries there, that they will lay siege, they will try to take Jerusalem. Mohammed Morsi wants to do it. The Hamas want to do it. They want to liberate the Gaza, march the millions of martyrs to Jerusalem. Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas wants it. That's what they want. They want Jerusalem. So when you talk about what's the big deal, what's the cup of trembling, what's going to make it happen, ultimately it's going to be a fight for Jerusalem. Now, when they recently Israel celebrated its 65th birthday on May 14th, but the Arabs celebrated their 65th day called Nakba when they got their, you know, what's kicked. And that also happened in 1948. And so the Palestinians tend to heat up their prayers around that time, and they have a mufti that goes in around the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And Israel's police kind of made it restrictive during that time. And that's what you were talking about earlier, when the Parliament of Jordan and the Parliament of Egypt said that they want their envoys brought back out of Israel, and they want the ambassador of Israel expelled out of their countries. Now, I don't know if that ever came to fruition, but the next thing they were talking about is breaking the peace, just because there was restriction on access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So, I mean, like you say, if all of a sudden Arafat turns up poisoned and they start fingering Israel, and then some missiles go on somewhere, next thing you know, that could be what catalyzes this whole mess.
Well, and it certainly could spiral out of control. I mean, we both know that. We watch this every day. I mean, like you, I'm constantly I'm looking at all sorts of different news reports and trying to figure out what's going on. And then, of course, you know, we've got some people over there that we get some of our intel from, one man in particular, Rabbi Glazerson. So he's actually in Los Angeles this week, and hopefully we'll have some time to meet with him over the weekend and find out what's going on. Bill, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. You got 2 minutes. Just give us a quick little wrap up. Sort of encourage people what we can do. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem is certainly one thing, but wrap things up for us tonight. And again, thanks for having us, or thanks for coming back on the show. Really appreciate it.
Well, I mean, it boils down to the same thing we always close with when we speak together, LA, and it's about Jesus Christ. It's about realizing that God loves us It says in Psalm 83:18 is a good way to start. It says at the very end of Psalm 83, the last 18 verses after Israel defeats the Arab armies, it says that they may know that you, Jehovah, art the Most High God above all the earth. The point is, things are going to happen in this world where the God of the Bible is going to be known as the Most High God above all the earth. And so what I try to tell people when we go speak or when your audience here is that, you know, don't wait for these things start to happen so that you can recognize that there is a God who predicted these things would happen. I spoke at after we spoke in New York, I went and spoke in Michigan at a Bible study, and I was talking about the destruction of Damascus. The guy came up to the host of the Bible study, unbeknownst to me, and said, you know what, I'll believe in that Bible stuff when I see Damascus destroyed. You know, that could be a photo finish, folks, because Jesus Christ could be coming to get his bride at any given moment. I don't know whether you're pre or mid or post rapture, but the point is, if he comes at any given moment and you're waiting to see Damascus get destroyed, which you may see this year, you might come in under a photo finish, and you don't want to be stuck here after the rapture because the Antichrist comes on the scene and you got the tribulation and all the judgment. So I would just conclude by saying that the time for people to recognize who the God of this world is, the God of the Bible, who sent Jesus Christ to die for us, is now, because America's collapsing, and the Middle East is going to go apocalyptic.